This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Chinese Cinderella, The True Story of an Unwanted Daughter, by Adeline Yen Ma, narrated by Felice Ye.
Chapter 1, Top of the Class, Autumn 1941. As soon as I got home from school, Aunt Baba noticed the silver medal dangling from the left breast pocket of my uniform. She was combing her hair in front of the mirror in our room when I rushed in and plopped my school bag down onto my bed. "What's that hanging on your dress?" "It's something special that Mother Agnes gave me in front of the whole class this afternoon. She called it an award." My aunt looked thrilled. "So soon? You only started kindergarten a week ago. What is it for?" "It's for leading my class this week. When Mother Agnes pinned it on my dress, she said I could wear it for 7 days. Here, this certificate goes with it." I opened my school bag and handed her an envelope as I climbed onto her lap. She opened the envelope and took out the certificate. "Why, it's all written in French or English or some other foreign language. How do you expect me to read this, my precious little treasure?" I knew she was pleased because she was smiling as she hugged me. "One day soon," she continued, "you'll be able to translate all this into Chinese for me. Until then, we'll just write today's date on the envelope and put it away somewhere safe. Go close the door properly and put on the latch so no one will come in." I watched her open her closet door and take out her safe deposit box. She took the key from a gold chain around her neck and placed my certificate underneath her jade bracelet, pearl necklace, and diamond watch, as if my award were also some precious jewel impossible to replace. As she closed the lid, an old photograph fell out. I picked up the faded picture and saw a solemn young man and woman, both dressed in old-fashioned Chinese robes. The man looked rather familiar. "Is this a picture of my father and dead mama?" I asked. "No, this is the wedding picture of your grandparents. Your Yuya was 26, and your Nai Nai was only 15. She quickly took the photo from me and locked it into her box. "Do you have a picture of my dead mama?" She avoided my eyes. "No, but I have wedding pictures of your father and your stepmother, Niang. You were only 1 year old when they married. Do you want to see them?" "No, I've seen those before. I just want to see one of my own mama. Do I look like her?" Aunt Baba did not reply, but busied herself with putting the safe deposit box back into her closet. After a while, I said, "When did my mama die?" "Your mother came down with a high fever 3 days after you were born. She died when you were 2 weeks old." She hesitated for a moment, then exclaimed suddenly, "How dirty your hands are! Have you been playing in that sandbox at school again? Go wash them at once. Then come back and do your homework." I did as I was told. Though I was only 4 years old, I understood I should not ask Aunt Baba too many questions about my dead mama. Big Sister once told me, "Aunt Baba and Mama used to be best friends. A long time ago, they worked together in a bank in Shanghai owned by our grandaunt, the youngest sister of Grandfather Yuya. But then Mama died giving birth to you. If you had not been born, Mama would still be alive. She died because of you. You are bad luck." Chapter 2, A Tianjin Family. At the time of my birth, Big Sister was 6.5 years old. My 3 brothers were 5, 4, and 3. They blamed me for causing Mama's death and never forgave me. A year later, Father remarried. Our stepmother, whom we called Niang, was a 17-year-old Eurasian beauty, 14 years his junior. Father always introduced her to his friends as his French wife, though she was actually half French and half Chinese. Besides Chinese, she also spoke French and English. She was almost as tall as Father, stood very straight, and dressed only in French clothes, many of which came from Paris. Her thick, wavy black hair never had a curl out of place. Her large, dark brown eyes were fringed with long, thick lashes. She wore heavy makeup, expensive French perfume, and many diamonds and pearls. Grandmother Nai Nai told us to call her Niang, Chinese term for mother. 1 year after their wedding, they had a son, 4th brother, followed by a daughter, little sister. There were now 7 of us, 5 children from Father's first wife, and 2 from our stepmother, Niang. Besides Father and Niang, we lived with our grandfather, Yuya, grandmother Nai Nai, and Aunt Baba in a big house in the French concession of Tianjin, a port city on the northeast coast of China. Aunt Baba was the older sister of our father. Because she was meek, shy, and unmarried, and had no money of her own, they ordered her to take care of me. From an early age, I slept in a crib in her room. This suited me well because I grew to know her better and better. Besides a room, we came to share a life apart from the rest of our family. Under the circumstances, perhaps it was inevitable that, in time, we came to care for each other very deeply. Many years before, China had lost a war, known as the Opium War, against England and France. As a result, many coastal cities in China, such as Tianjin and Shanghai, came to be occupied by foreign soldiers. The conquerors parceled out the best areas of these treaty ports for themselves, claiming them as their own territories or concessions. Tianjin's French concession was like a little piece of Paris transplanted into the center of this big Chinese city. Our house was built in the French style and looked as if it had been lifted from a tree-shaded avenue near the Eiffel Tower. Surrounded by a charming garden, it had porches, balconies, bow windows, awnings, and a slanting tile roof. Across the street was Saint Louis Catholic Boys' School, where the teachers were French missionaries. In December 1941, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, the United States became involved in the Second World War. Though Tianjin was occupied by the Japanese, the French concession was still being governed by French officials. French policemen strutted about looking important and barking out orders in their own language, which they expected everyone to understand and obey. At my school, Mother Agnes taught us the alphabet and how to count in French. Many of the streets around our house were named after dead French heroes or Catholic saints. When translated into Chinese, these street names became so complicated that Yuya and Nai Nai often had trouble remembering them. Bilingual store signs were common, but the most exclusive shops painted their signs only in French. Nai Nai told us this was the foreigners' way of announcing that no Chinese were allowed there, except for maids in charge of white children. Chapter 3. Nai Nai's Bound Feet. The evening of the day when I brought home my silver school medal, the dinner bell rang at 7. Aunt Baba took my hand and led me into the dining room. My grandparents were just ahead of us. Aunt Baba told me to run quickly to the head of the big round dining table and pull out Grandmother Nai Nai's chair for her. Nainai walked very slowly because of her bound feet. I watched her as she inched her way toward me, hobbling and swaying as if her toes had been partly cut off. As she sat down with a sigh of relief, I placed my foot next to her embroidered black silk shoe to compare sizes. "Nainai, how come your feet are so tiny?" I asked. "When I was 3 years old, a tight bandage was wound around my feet, bending the toes under the sole and crushing the arch so that my feet would remain small all my life. This has been the custom in China for over 1,000 years, ever since the Tang Dynasty. In my day, small feet were considered feminine and beautiful. If you had large, unbound feet, no man would marry you. This was the custom." "Did it hurt?" "Of course. It hurt so badly I couldn't sleep. I screamed with pain and begged my mother to free my feet, but she wouldn't. In fact, the pain has never gone away. My feet have hurt every day since they were bound, and continue to hurt today. I had a pair of perfectly normal feet when I was born, but they maimed me on purpose and gave me lifelong arthritis so I would be attractive. Just be thankful this horrible custom was done away with 30 years ago. Otherwise, your feet would be crippled, and you wouldn't be able to run or jump either." I went to the foot of the table and sat in my assigned seat between second brother and third brother as my three brothers ran in, laughing and jostling each other. I cringed as second brother sat down on my right. He was always grabbing my share of goodies when nobody was looking and saying mean things to me. Second brother used to sit next to big brother, but the two of them fought a lot. Father finally separated them when they broke a fruit bowl fighting over a pear. Big brother winked at me as he sat down. He had a twinkle in his eye and was whistling a tune. The day before, he'd tried to teach me how to whistle, but no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't make it work. Was big brother up to some new mischief today? The previous Sunday afternoon, I had come across him crouched by Grandfather Yoyo's bed, watching Yoyo like a cat while he took his nap. A long black hair from Yoyo's right nostril was being blown out and drawn in with every snore. Silently but swiftly, Big Brother suddenly approached Yoyo and carefully pinched the nasal hair between his forefinger and thumb. There was a tantalizing pause as Yoyo exhaled with a long, contented wheeze. Meanwhile, I held my breath, mesmerized and not daring to make a sound. Finally, Yoyo inhaled deeply. Doggedly, Big Brother hung on. The hair was wrenched from its root. Yoyo woke up with a yell, jumped from his bed, took in the situation with one glance and went after Big Brother with a feather duster. Laughing hysterically, Big Brother rushed out of the room, slid down the banister, and made a clean getaway into the garden, all the time holding Yoyo's hair aloft like a trophy. Third brother took his seat on my left. He had his lips pursed and was trying unsuccessfully to whistle. Seeing the medal on my uniform, he raised his eyebrow and smiled at me. "What's that?" he asked in his quiet, thoughtful way. "It's an award for leading my class. My teacher says I can wear it for 7 days." "Congratulations. First week at school and you get a medal. Not bad." While I was basking in third brother's praise, I suddenly felt a hard blow across the back of my head. I turned around to see second brother glowering at me.
"What did you do that for?" I asked angrily.
Deliberately, he took my right arm under the table and gave it a quick, hard twist while no one was looking. "Because I feel like it. That's why, you ugly little squirt. This'll teach you to show off your mettle."
I turned for help from third brother, but he was looking straight ahead, obviously not wishing to be involved.
At that moment, father, Niang, and big sister came in together, and second brother immediately let go of my arm. Niang was speaking to big sister in English, and big sister was nodding assent. She glanced at all of us smugly as she took her seat between second brother and Niang, full of her own self-importance at being so favored by our stepmother. Because her left arm had been paralyzed by a birth injury, her movements were slow and awkward, and she liked to order me or third brother to carry out her chores. "Wu Mei, fifth younger sister," she now said, "go fetch my English-Chinese dictionary. It's on my bed in my room. Niang wants me to translate something." I was halfway off my chair when Nai Nai said, "Do the translation later. Sit down, Wu Mei. Let's have dinner before the dishes get cold. Here, let me first pick a selection of soft foods to send up to the nursery so the wet nurse can feed the two youngest." She turned to Niang with a smile. "Another 2 years and all seven grandchildren will be sitting around this table. Won't that be wonderful?" Niang's two-year-old son, fourth brother, and her infant daughter, little sister, were still too young to eat with us. However, they were already special from the moment of their birth. Though nobody actually said so, it was simply understood that everyone considered Niang's real children better looking and smarter than her stepchildren. Simply superior in every way. Who dared disagree? For dessert, the maids brought in a huge bowl of my favorite fruit, dragon's eyes. I was so happy I couldn't help laughing out loud. Nai Nai gave us each a small bowl of fruit, and I counted seven dragon's eyes in mine. I peeled off the leathery brown skin and was savoring its delicate white flesh when Father suddenly pointed to my medal.
"Is this medal for leading your class?" he asked.
I nodded eagerly, too excited to speak. A hush fell upon the table. This was the first time anyone could remember Father singling me out or saying anything to me. Everyone looked at my medal.
"Is the left side of your chest heavier?" Father continued, beaming with pride. "Are you tilting?"
I flushed with pleasure and could barely swallow. My big jiajia was actually teasing me. On his way out, he even patted me on my head. Then he said, "Continue studying hard and bring honor to our Yen family name so we can be proud of you." All the grown-ups beamed at me as they followed Father out of the room. How wonderful! My triumph had become Father's triumph. I must study harder and keep wearing this medal so I can go on pleasing Father. But what was this? Big sister was coming toward me with a scowl. Without a word, she reached over and snatched two dragon's eyes from my bowl as she left the room. My three brothers followed her example. Then they all ran out, leaving me quite alone with my silver medal, staring at my empty bowl. Chapter 4, Life in Tianjin. A few months later, in early 1942, winter time. When I started kindergarten at St. Joseph's French Convent School, Big Sister had been going there for years and years, and was already in the fifth grade. She complained so much about having to walk me to and from school that Grandmother Nai Nai finally told Ah Mao, the rickshaw puller, to pull us there and back. Father had bought the shiny black rickshaw 3 years earlier as a 50th birthday present so that Nai Nai could visit her friends and play mahjong. It had inflatable rubber tires, a brass lamp on each side, and a bell operable by foot as well as by hand. Every morning, Ah Mao could be seen sweeping the seat, washing the sides, brushing the canopy, and polishing the brass. My brothers were forever begging him to let them pull each other back and forth in the garden, but Ah Mao was fiercely protective and would scatter them away. Outside our garden, an old, blind, and crippled beggar woman often sat on the pavement. As soon as Ah Mao opened the gate, she would bang her tin plate, tilt back her head, and wail in a loud voice, "Have pity on me!" Big sister, Dajie, and I were both a little frightened of her. "Run faster, big sister," Dajie would urge Ah Mao. "Get away from her as fast as you can." I was always happy when our rickshaw approached the imposing red brick building of St. Joseph's. I loved everything about my school. All the other little girls dressed in identical starched white uniforms just like mine. The French Franciscan nuns in black and white habits with big metal crosses dangling from their necks. Learning numbers, catechism, and the alphabet. Playing hopscotch and skipping rope at recess. My classmates made me feel as if I belonged. Unlike my siblings, nobody looked down on me. The school bell rang and it was time to go home. I rushed out of the classroom and ran straight toward Ah Mao, who was squatting on his haunches between the handlebars of his rickshaw, smoking a cigarette on the pavement by the school gate. He smiled as I approached and waved me onto his cab. "I wonder how long we're going to have to wait today," he grumbled as he lit a fresh cigarette. I said nothing, but I knew what he meant. It was annoying. Big sister was always among the last to leave when school finished. She seemed to enjoy having her friends notice that her rickshaw puller and younger sister could be found waiting for her every afternoon while she took her own sweet time. Today we waited for her even longer than usual. It was beastly cold and there was a sharp northwesterly wind blowing. After a while, Ah Mao wandered off to chat with a tea peddler on the corner and warm his hands against the peddler's steaming kettle. My face, fingers, and toes were numb with cold. Finally, I saw her appear in the playground, laughing and joking with a few big girls from her class until the nuns shooed them out and locked the gate behind them. Big sister scowled as she climbed in while I shrank into my corner. She jabbed the bell angrily several times with her foot and called sharply. Ah Mao ran back, stepped between the shafts, and off we went. "What did the nuns teach you today?" Big sister suddenly asked imperiously. "They taught us about God," I replied proudly. "I'm going to test you." "Who made you?" I was happy because I knew the answer. "God made me." "Why did God make you?" "I don't know, because teacher hasn't told us yet." "That's just an excuse," Big Sister screamed. "You don't know because you are stupid, and you don't deserve to wear this." Suddenly, she grabbed my medal and jerked it, becoming enraged because I was pushing her away. "Take that, medal winner, teacher's pet. Who do you think you are, showing off week after week?" Big Sister cried as she slapped me with her strong right hand. Ah Mao, who had stopped at a red light, turned around to look when he heard the slap. Big Sister nonchalantly straightened her uniform and ordered him to run faster because she was hungry. She told Ah Mao that Cook was making pot stickers and they were her favorite afternoon snack. As soon as we were home, Big Sister jumped down and ran off. Ah Mao helped me alight, pointed to my medal, smiled broadly, and gave me the thumbs-up sign, shaking his fist up and down to signal his admiration. I was winning the medal every week and wearing it constantly. I knew this displeased my siblings, especially Big Sister and Second Brother, but it was the only way to make Father take notice and be proud of me. Besides, my teachers and schoolmates seemed to be happy for me. I loved my school more and more. Finally, it was the end of term. Our whole school was assembled in the auditorium for prize giving. The French Monsignor himself was waiting on the stage to present us with our awards. Mother Agnes suddenly called my name in front of everyone. She announced that I had won a special award for wearing the weekly medal for more weeks than any other student. My heart beat wildly as I approached the stage, but the steps leading up to the Monsignor were too high and steep for my short little legs. What should I do? Finally, I had no choice but to climb up to the stage on my hands and knees. Everyone was hooting with laughter and clapping wildly. Were they applauding me? On my way back to my seat, I couldn't help noticing that, of all the prize winners, I was the only one unaccompanied by anyone from my family. Nobody was there to pat my head or congratulate me, not even my Aunt Baba. As for Big Sister, she had refused to go to school that day. She'd said she had a stomach ache. Aunt Baba told me that Japan was a strong country that had conquered most of China, including the city of Tianjin, where we lived. My three brothers were always grumbling about the Japanese classes they were required to take at school. We children were supposed to show our respect and bow whenever we ran past Japanese soldiers. Otherwise, they would punish us or even kill us. Once, Big Brother's best friend was kicked and slapped by a Japanese soldier because he forgot to bow when he ran past. That morning, Yuya had stopped Third Brother from kicking a paper ball made of old newspapers because a photo of the Japanese emperor was visible on its surface. Everyone hated the Japanese, but even the grown-ups were scared of them. Now there was talk that the Japanese were demanding to become Father's business partners. Father looked terribly worried, and his hair started to fall out. Many Japanese men in business suits came to the house looking for him, even on Sundays. They came with Japanese bodyguards who wore surgical masks on their faces and carried scary-looking bayonets with big, sharp knives at the tips. It was a great nuisance because we had to bow and show respect to anyone who looked Japanese. After their departure, Father would talk to Yuya alone for hours and hours in their office. One morning, Father left the house to buy stamps at the post office down the road. He never came home. Yuya reported Father's disappearance to the police. He put up posters and placed advertisements in the newspapers, offering a reward for news of Father's whereabouts, alive or dead. The Japanese came back a few times looking for Father, but soon lost interest. With Father absent, his business ground to a halt. There was no more money to be made, and the Japanese dropped their demands. A few months later, our stepmother, Niang, took our younger brother, fourth brother, and also left the house. Nobody knew where they went.
It was all rather frightening and very mysterious.
Yuya told us that Father, Niang, and fourth brother had gone away for a while. After the strangeness wore off, we weren't particularly bothered because Father traveled often on business. Besides, Yuya, Nai Nai, and Aunt Baba were still home. The Japanese stopped bothering us. Life settled down and became tranquil, even happy. Yuya employed 7 maids, a cook, a chauffeur, and Amal, the rickshaw puller. The grown-ups held frequent mahjong parties. We children could invite our friends home to play. On Sundays, Yuya took everyone out for drives in Father's big black motor car. We lunched at different restaurants in the foreign concessions, French, Russian, German, Italian, and Japanese. Sometimes we even got to go to movies suitable for children. Life seemed better than ever. Father, Niang, and fourth brother had been gone for well over a year, and I had almost forgotten them. There was a heat wave, and we were all in the parlor discussing the next day's dinner menu. Aunt Baba suggested to cook that we should have dumplings instead of rice for a change. These yummy dumplings were stuffed with pork, chives, and spring onions, and were absolutely delicious. Big brother shouted that he could eat 50 of them at one sitting. Second brother immediately claimed 60, and third brother wanted 60 also. Big sister ordered 70. Big brother told her she was already too fat. She screamed at him to shut up, and they started to argue. Nai Nai said, "What a racket. I'm getting a headache from all this commotion. It's getting late. I'm going to my room to soak my aching feet." She turned to me. "Wu Mei, run down to the kitchen and tell them to bring me a pan of hot water." I watched the maid pour the steaming hot water from a thermos flask into an enamel basin and followed her into Nai Nai's bedroom. Nai Nai was sitting on the edge of her bed and slowly unwinding the filmy silk bindings from her feet. "Are you sure you want to stay here?" she asked me. "Your Nai Nai's feet are going to stink up this room as soon as I take these bindings off." "Please let me stay," I begged as I squatted beside her on the floor. The truth was that I was fascinated by her tiny feet. It was like watching a horror movie. You want to see it and don't want to see it at the same time. I stared at Nai Nai's toes, all deformed and twisted grotesquely beneath her soles. Slowly she immersed them in the pan of hot water, sighing with relief and contentment. She then rubbed them gently with a bar of sweet-smelling soap until the whole basin was covered with lather. Aunt Baba came in and helped Nai Nai trim her thick toenails and cut off pieces of dead skin. "See how lucky you are," Nai Nai said to me. "By being born at the right time, both you and your Aunt Baba didn't have to go through the torture I went through and having my feet bound. How I wish I could have just one day when my feet didn't hurt." "When Nai Nai was your age, she couldn't run or jump anymore," Aunt Baba said to me. "And here you even get to go to school every day just like your brothers. You'd better run along now and get to bed. It's way after your bedtime." After I left, Aunt Baba talked to Nai Nai for a little while longer. She then went to take her bath. 15 minutes later, Yuya was pounding on her bathroom door. Nai Nai had fainted and was frothing at the mouth.
Aunt Baba telephoned the doctor, but it was already too late. Nai Nai had died from a massive stroke. I woke up from a sound sleep and saw Aunt Baba sitting by herself at the dressing table and crying. I crawled into her lap and put my arms around her to comfort her. Aunt Baba told me that Nai Nai's life had evaporated like an episode in a spring dream. Outside, I could hear crickets humming in the summer heat and hawkers shouting their wares on the pavement below. How could everything remain so much the same when Nai Nai was no longer with us? Nai Nai's body was placed in a tightly sealed coffin in the parlor. Buddhist monks dressed in long robes chanted mantras. Yo-Yo ordered us children to spend the night and sleep on the floor in the same room to keep Nai Nai company. Third brother whispered in my ear that Nai Nai was going to push open the coffin lid and wander out at midnight. I was scared and couldn't sleep. All night, while listening to the monks praying and watching their shining bald heads in the flickering candlelight, I half yearned and half feared that Nai Nai would crawl out and resume her place among us. Next day, there was a grand funeral. Nai Nai's coffin was draped with white sheets and placed on a hearse pulled by four men. We all dressed in white robes with white headbands for the boys and white ribbons for the girls. Big Brother acted as chief mourner in Father's absence. Hired musicians extolled Nai Nai's virtues. They tossed white paper coins into the air while making music and singing prayers. The hearse stopped six times so Big Brother could fall to his knees, kowtow and bewail Nai Nai's loss in a loud voice. At the Buddhist temple, the monks held a solemn ceremony. Amid hymns and the scent of incense, we burned articles made of paper or cardboard for Nai Nai's needs in the next world. There were cardboard beds, tables, chairs, pots and pans, and even a mahjong set. My brothers fought over a large paper car covered with bright tinfoil. I watched the smoke curl up from the sacrificial urn and believed with all my heart that it would regroup somewhere into household utensils for the exclusive use of our Nai Nai in heaven. Chapter 5. Arrival in Shanghai. 6 weeks after Nai Nai's funeral, Yo-Yo took Big Sister, Big Brother, Second Brother, and me for an outing. To our surprise, our car stopped first at the railroad station. After instructing our chauffeur to wait outside in the car, Yo-Yo marched the four of us onto a crowded platform marked with a sign, "To Shanghai." There, in a first-class compartment, we came face to face with Father, sitting by himself. He was dressed in a black suit and black tie. His eyes were red, and he had been crying. We were delighted and astonished. Big Sister asked, "How long have you been back, Father?" He told her he had just arrived a few hours ago, but was planning to leave again almost immediately. He said he missed us and was in Tianjin specially to escort us south to Shanghai. Where was Shanghai? It was a large port city 1,000 miles away, and our grandaunt owned a big bank there. He, Niang, and fourth brother had been living there 1.5 years. Since third brother was still recuperating from measles, he would join us later with little sister, Yaya, and Aunt Baba. Being devout Buddhists, Yo-Yo and Aunt Baba wished to observe the traditional 100-day religious mourning period for Nai Nai before leaving Tianjin. What about our clothes? Big Brother asked.
Aunt Baba is arranging to have them delivered separately, Father replied.
If you had taken too much luggage with you, the servants would have become suspicious.
It's important that the servants know nothing about my whereabouts. Otherwise, the Japanese might arrest me.
During the train journey, talk to each other as little as possible so you'll give nothing away.
Now, say goodbye to your yaya. The train is leaving in 5 minutes.
Father's Shanghai house was on Avenue Joffre, deep in the heart of the French Concession. It was a big, square, dark gray concrete building, just like all the other 69 houses within the same Long Tong, a cluster of houses surrounded by a communal wall. Father's chauffeur drove us from the station through the main lane of our Long Tong, turned left into a narrower alleyway, and stopped in front of a wrought iron gate. Father led us into a charming garden with a small lawn lined by clipped camellia bushes, a magnolia tree with wonderfully fragrant blooms, and a wishing well next to a wooden doghouse. A large, ferocious German shepherd rushed out and jumped excitedly at the sight of Father, but barked at us. I glanced briefly at the fierce, brutish animal with its sharp teeth and pointed ears. Father noticed and said to me, "His name is Jackie. Don't be afraid of him. Just behave naturally. He is getting obedience training lessons every week from a German dog trainer. He won't dare bite you." All the same, I was nervous. I got away and followed Big Brother up 3 stone steps through tall French doors into the formal living room. "Here we are," Father said, looking around proudly as we gawked in open-mouthed wonder at the burgundy velvet couches, matching velvet curtains, and thick woolen carpet partially covering a teak parquet floor. The wallpaper had long strips of raised velvet napping that matched the curtains. Beautiful white orchids in an antique Ming Dynasty vase rested on an elegant imitation Louis XVI coffee table. Everything was ornate, formal, polished, and hard. Niang entered, holding Fourth Brother's hand. We greeted her timidly. Like the room, our stepmother was also stylish and flawless, with her large, piercing eyes, long, shapely nails painted bright red, and enormous flashing diamonds at her throat, wrist, and ears. Standing opposite her made me feel quite shabby and ill at ease.
"Sit down, all of you, and welcome to our Shanghai home," Niang announced in a loud, clear voice. "The maids will show you to your rooms. This house consists of 3 floors. On the ground floor, the living room and dining room are in front. The kitchen, garage, and servants' quarters are in the back. You are to enter and leave the house by the back door only. The front gate leading out of the garden is reserved for Father's guests. So is the living room. You are not to invite any of your friends home or to visit them in their houses. The second floor is where your father and I, and your younger brother and sister, have our rooms. You are not allowed to enter any of the rooms on our floor without our permission. All of you will live on the third floor. You 3 boys will sleep in the same room. Wu Mei, 5th daughter, will share a room with Aunt Baba. Yaya and Big Sister will each have a private room. Keep your rooms tidy, because your father and I might come up and make an inspection at any time. We have enrolled all of you at very expensive private missionary schools. School starts next Monday. Now, go with the maids to your rooms and wash yourselves. In half an hour, cook will ring the dinner bell. As soon as you hear it, all of you will come down at once. Do you understand?
We nodded solemnly. As we climbed the stairs, Big Brother muttered, "To her, we are not separate people. Here, we have become one single unit known as all of you. Seems like this is how it's going to be from now on."
Chapter 6, First Day at School. On Monday morning, with Aunt Baba still in Tianjin, a maid helped me put on my brand new school uniform. It was white, a little too long, stiff with starch, and had the name of my new school, Sacred Heart, Shengxin, in bright red Chinese characters embroidered on the left breast pocket. After breakfast, I stayed in the hallway for what seemed like a very long time, waiting for someone to take me to school, wondering who it was going to be. I was excited to be starting first grade in my new primary school, which was next door to Big Sister's Aurora Middle School. Big Sister, however, was still in bed. Her classes were scheduled to begin an hour later than mine. The chauffeur had already left to drive my brothers to St. John's Academy, which was in the opposite direction. I saw Cook wheeling his bicycle through the hallway to go to market. He spotted me watching him.
"Who's taking you to school?" he asked.
"I don't know." I was nervous and couldn't help shooting a wistful glance at the big clock ticking away on the wall. It was getting late, and everyone had forgotten about me. What should I do? I was panic-stricken and felt tears rolling down my cheeks. Cook shrugged.
"Certainly not my job. No one mentioned anything to me about you."
He was about to mount his bike and ride away when he noticed my tears.
"Now, now. Don't cry. Being late for school isn't the end of the world."
"Oh, all right. Come along, then," he mumbled gruffly as he lifted me onto the handlebars of his bicycle. "Your Shengxin Primary School happens to be right next to the market. Sit here quietly and don't squirm. We'll be there in no time at all." After school was let out in the early afternoon, I waited with all the other first graders by the school gate. One by one, they were greeted and led away by their anxiously hovering mothers. Eventually, I was the only one left. Nobody had come for me. The metal gate slowly clanged shut behind me as I watched my classmates disperse, each clutching her mother's hand and eagerly recounting the adventures of her first day at school. After a long time, I peered through a crack into the deserted playground. Not a person was in sight. Cautiously, I pushed against the massive iron doorway. It was firmly locked. Trembling with fear, I realized that no one was coming to pick me up. Too embarrassed to knock or draw attention to myself, I walked tentatively out into the Shanghai streets. Surely, if I tried hard enough, I would remember the way home. It was a beautiful, sunny afternoon. At first, I wandered along a wide, straight road lined with tall, leafy trees. Motor cars, trams, rickshaws, pedicabs, and bicycles whizzed by. I kept walking but dared not cross the road, glancing briefly at the open-fronted stores overhung with colorful, upright, bilingual signboards. I turned a corner, and now the sidewalk seethed with people and noise and commotion. Coolies shouldering heavy loads on bamboo poles, hawkers selling toys, crickets in cages, fans, cold tea, candies, meat-filled buns, spring rolls, tea eggs, and fermented bean curd. Stalls and booths offering services such as haircuts,
shaves, dental care, letter writing, extraction of earwax. Beggars banging tin cups and chanting for a handout. Except for me, everyone was striding purposefully along, going somewhere. Everyone had a destination. I must have walked for miles and miles. But where was I? Should I enter a shop and ask for directions? But I didn't know my home address. What should I say? Should I approach that kindly old storekeeper smiling at me from the doorway of his antique shop and tell him, "Please, sir, I want to go home." But where was my home? It was getting dark. Bright neon signs in blue, yellow, red, and orange came on and blinked at me. Had anyone at home missed me? Did they think I was still at school? Were they looking for me? What should I do? I walked past a bustling, brightly lit dim sum shop. Such a wonderful aroma was wafting through the door. Through the plate glass window, I saw roast ducks, soy sauce chickens, and hunks of glistening roast pork hanging from hooks. There was a young chef wielding his cleaver and deftly chopping a duck into bite-sized pieces on a wooden block. Wouldn't it be heavenly to be given a slice of meat? But that might be too much to hope for. I would be quite content with a piece of bone to chew on. As I salivated, I imagined the taste of the food sliding down my throat. Breakfast seemed such a long time ago. Someone was touching my shoulder. I started and looked up. A large, red-faced woman whom I had just seen bustling around the tables in the restaurant was speaking to me. "You've been standing here for almost half an hour. What's your mother doing that she would leave you waiting out here all by yourself? Doesn't she know it's dangerous for a little girl your age to be hanging around on the street like this? Are you supposed to have dinner with her here?" Terrified, I lowered my head and shuffled my feet. "Come and wait for her inside," she commanded, as she glanced at my brand new school uniform. "My daughter started school today, too." Inside, it was hot and noisy. I stood hesitantly by the door. Suddenly, I noticed a black telephone next to the cash register. Why, just the day before, Big Brother and I had been playing, and he had taught me a new numbers game he had just invented. Take any number and add, subtract, multiply, or divide it. The one who comes up with the number 13 first wins. "What number should we use, Big Brother?" "Dacă," I'd asked. "Run downstairs and get our telephone number. It's marked on the front of the telephone in the stairway." I'd rushed down for the number, and we'd played with it all afternoon. Backward and forward, breaking it down and building it up again. 79281. That was it. 79281. Finally, Big Brother had won. He'd broken 79281 into 9, 8, 21, and 7. 9 minus 8 equals 1. 21 divided by 7 equals 3. He then placed the number 3 to the right of the number 1 and got 13, thereby winning the game. I clapped my hands in glee and admiration. I felt honored that Big Brother had deigned to play with me all afternoon. No one was looking when I picked up the phone and dialed. Father answered on the third ring. "Speak up," he shouted. "There's so much background noise. Who is it?"
"It's your daughter, fifth daughter, Wu Mei."
"Where are you?" Father asked in an even voice, quite calmly,
And suddenly, with a pang, I realized nobody had missed me. They didn't even know I wasn't home. I'm in a restaurant. I got lost when I tried to walk home from school.
Let me speak to the proprietor. You stay right there, and I'll come and pick you up.
Soon afterward, Father arrived and drove me home in his big black Buick. Traffic was light, and he drove in silence. When we arrived, he patted me on my head.
Next time you go anywhere for the first time, he admonished as he handed me a map of Shanghai from the glove compartment of his car. Read this map and find where you are and where you wish to go. This way, you'll never get lost again.
That's exactly what I'll do, I thought to myself. After dinner, I'm going to ask Big Brother to teach me how to read this map. With Aunt Baba still in Tianjin, there's obviously nobody looking out for me. I'll just have to find my own way.
Chapter 7. Family Reunion. Big Brother told me that Yuya, Aunt Baba, third brother, and little sister were scheduled to arrive in Shanghai on the last Sunday in October. I started counting the days. Little sister had been separated from her mother, Niang, since she was just 6 months old. Now she was almost two, and Aunt Baba had mentioned in her last letter that little sister was starting to jabber away in Mandarin with a strong Tianjin accent. How adorable! On the morning of their arrival, Father and the chauffeur met them at the station. I was overjoyed to see my beloved Aunt Baba and Yaya again. Third brother looked taller and thinner, but little sister had changed